This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to another episode of Happy Mum, Happy Baby, the podcast. Today's guest is my co-host on the Baby Club. So people probably think we know each other really, really well, but in actuality, we've probably had a few hour-long conversations on the train going up to Manchester, and that's about it. So I'm actually going to really enjoy today. As well as doing the Baby Club, he is a presenter, obviously, a performer. He's part of the original London cast of Stomp, which I love. And he's founder of Dadvengers, a site that supports dads to be hands-on and dad of two. It's Nigel Clark. Hello.
Hey.
How are you?
Lovely to be here.
I feel like this is probably going to be the most in-depth chat we've ever really had.
That's the thing. We're normally like ships passing. Mm. You'll go and do an episode, I'll be rehearsing one, and then I come on and you go off, and then you've got to do some photos over there and I've got to do some photos over here. So it's actually lovely to be able to just sit and talk.
Because we've only ever done one episode together, and that was the Christmas special.
Christmas special, one of the best.
So we should have, a couple of months ago, been filming series 3, but instead we've been doing Baby Club at home, in our homes.
Yes.
We've just been odd, but nice.
It's been odd and nice in such a beautiful way, because it's something beautiful has come out of the situation. And the thing for me that I've really enjoyed about the Baby Club at home is seeing everyone at home actually doing the things that we've asked them to do, and that we've given them the ideas, the activities, seeing them actually get involved and seeing the smiles on their faces and how much they're loving it. absolutely beautiful.
Well, but it's because it's all about like how the baby club came about and why it exists is for people that can't get to a baby club. So right now, no one can. So it feels like we're doing something that literally is for everyone.
Exactly. And there are people who've only discovered the show during lockdown because of this situation. And they're saying, oh, my goodness, I didn't know this was there. This is so amazing. Some of the comments that you just see on the socials just warm your heart.
Yeah. And you have two kids. How old are they?
So Rory is 12 and Sienna is 10, nearly 11, but probably going on 18.
So what's your age gap?
Age gap is about 20 months.
Nice.
20 months.
Yeah. And how has lockdown been with two almost teenagers then?
It's actually been really fantastic. Normally, as you know, I'm rushing around all over the place to go up to Manchester for work or here and there and everywhere to film a Baby Club episode or appear on a podcast or whatever. And so I'm always running around. So the fact that I've been at home continuously, week on week, they have actually they've like latched on to Daddy and Daddy's kind of latched on to them. And we're having lots of fun, whether it's doing TikToks, watching movies, doing homework. Whatever it is.
How has the homeschooling been?
I'm not going to lie. We've been really, really lucky with their schools because they've been having teams online from 8:30 in the morning. When Rory started in the first week, he had to be in a shirt. He didn't have to wear a tie. He had to be in a shirt on teams, teachers there till 4 o'clock.
Oh my God. Oh my yeah. God.
Yeah. Assignments in lessons to hand in at the end of the lesson. Really amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. And then even more than that, they were taking care of them. Like when the whole George Floyd Black Lives Matter thing happened, like I had his house tutor like phoning up and asking, is he all right? But like taking a real interest, like the pastoral care has just been amazing.
That's
absolutely
amazing.
How
have you, obviously it's something that we're going to talk about in the podcast anyway, but how have you talked about that with them? Because there's no avoiding it. And they are older. They're going to be really aware of what's going on.
Yeah, totally. Having children that are multiracial and being a black father, you talk about race a lot earlier, I think, with your kids than let's say, if you were white. So I have talked to them about race and race is, I wouldn't say in their face, but they're aware of it and they're aware of the diverse nature of this the world we live in. Yeah. And they're also aware that that could mean that you get treated differently or you could bump into racism or prejudice or all of those different kinds of things. So they were much more aware of it, but when the George Floyd thing happened, they get to see a different side of it. So they saw protesting, they saw police, you know, and protesters going against each other and things like that. So I think it took a bit more of a scary tone for them. And I remember one evening my son came to me and he said to me, Daddy, I'm a little bit scared. I'm thinking about lots of things. And I said, well, what are you thinking about? And he said, well, the Black Lives Matter thing and whether are we going to be hurt or, you know, things like that. And I had to just literally sit down on the end of his bed and talk it through with him. And what I think had scared him more than anything else was seeing the bad side of it, the rioting and people, you know, doing things that the media want to portray because they're more dramatic.
Yeah.
You know, they're not just going to show the peaceful protesters. They're going to show, oh, this is going on here and people are getting a bit rowdy. So that seeing that side of things, I think, scared him a little bit.
Mm, which is completely understandable. And suddenly 100%. It feels like everyone is talking about it. Well, especially a few weeks ago, it felt like every news channel, every daytime piece of TV was all about Black Lives Matter, as it should be. But you can't avoid it with kids. Whatever, you know, it is everywhere.
It was literally everywhere. It was on every news channel. It was on social media. It like literally took over social media for that whole day. And for a few weeks afterwards, it's died down now. But yeah, when something is that prevalent and everywhere like that, of course, when you're a 10-year-old or a 12-year-old, you're going to see. And like I said, his school were asking him about whether he's okay. So if you've got people at school asking you about it, you know that it's a big thing. You know that is this a moment in history? Wish it was.
And you want it to be as well, because you want that change. You don't want that to die down and everyone just forget about it. I know everyone's off doing the work now and really assessing what they are doing and how they're acting, but you don't almost want it to quieten down because you want it to continue. You don't want it to be a moment. You want it to be a lifetime change.
That's exactly it. I mean, when it happened, I actually refrained from saying anything on social media for a couple of days just to see where it was kind of going. And then a few days later, I did a post on my Instagram that was literally just about people. I think I called it staying on the wagon. It's not something you jump on for a couple of days because it's a hashtag happening and it's Blackout Tuesday. That's not going to help. It's a lifelong effort that we need to make, because I don't think it will be changed in our generation. It's our children's generation that will change it. So yeah, I did a post literally that was all about, it's not about the next day, 2 days, 3 days. It's about the longevity and whether people are actually in it for the long run or whether they're just in it for the hashtag.
What was your childhood like?
I was really lucky. I had a great childhood. My parents worked every hour God could send them to send me to a really good school. My dad was a pharmacist and my mum was a midwife.
Oh, wow.
My mum was a midwife. She actually delivered my two kids.
No! My gosh!
She actually delivered my two. I was there with my mum when they came out, as it were. So it was a really lovely experience to be able to share that with my mum, my partner. You know, it you can't write it. It's just the way it happened. So yeah, mum and dad really did as much as they could for me to be able to have the opportunities, because being black parents, to say it again, they had a harder time, and they knew that their children were going to have a harder time, so they wanted to give them the best opportunity and best option. So they, like I said, worked every hour to send me to a good school and keep me on the straight and narrow and have the best chance I could. So I can't really fault them for it. My upbringing was great. I mean, of course I would have had hard times being in my school. Let's say I was the only black member of my class all year. So it raises things that you become aware of growing up. But I can't say it was a bad childhood. It was great.
Were you very aware of that? Were you very aware of that growing up?
I've always been a really positive person, and I might have been aware of it, but maybe I turned a little bit of a blind eye to it and got on with things. I think I was aware of it, but I didn't dwell on it. I think that's probably the best way to put it. I didn't dwell on it. I did what I needed to do. I worked on what I enjoyed and did the things I loved, really, and stayed away from the people or influences that I thought might have been leading down the wrong sort of track.
What was family life like?
Family life was good. It was me and my sister, really, most of the time, because my mum, being a midwife, she worked nights.
Yeah.
So often she'd do a couple of nights a week at the hospital, and she'd come home and she'd want to sleep like for the first 4 hours of the day. So let's say on a Saturday morning, it would be me and my sister. We'd come down from our bedrooms or whatever, and we'd hit the TV and be. But then you get into the usual sibling like rouse and whatnot, and your mum's trying to sleep upstairs, your dad's at work, and you've woken your mum up at like 11 in the morning because you guys are fighting, and she's come down the stairs shouting and screaming at you because I'm trying to get some sleep, guys, can't you just sit and watch Going Live and not make any noise, whatever it is. So there was a lot of me and my sister. We really bonded, and Yeah, we used to play and go around and do things. And then we used to have family holidays, the usual things.
Did it make you think ahead, though, to family life of your own and having children?
Do you know what? Not really. I didn't massively think about, oh, what I'm going to be like when I have kids, or I really, really want kids. I was quite a driven person. So for me, it was about finding my place in the world and finding out what I wanted to do and what I enjoyed. So I kind of went down that route. And when I came out of school, I took a year out, then I went to uni and I didn't really want to finish that after a year. And then I found performing arts. And then that's where I kind of was like, bing, okay, I think I found my calling.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so how did you get to parenting? Was there a point where you started discussing it, and did it become something that you eventually were like, that's what I want to do, you know? Or...
No, that is not the way it went at all. I've got to be careful what I say here because my kids may listen to this one day. So I'm going to say it was a surprise.
Nice. Max was a surprise. Yep.
It was a surprise, but the best surprise in the world ever. And the first few months of that surprise, I was a little bit like, whoa, this is massive. What is going to happen? Where am I going to be? What's going to... panic. But then he arrived, and I kind of just went into an automatic father role. I mean, in the first few months, I was Mr. Nightfeeds. So Melina would express, and then I was in charge of Nightfeed. So 1 a.m, 2 a.m, that was me. That was me and Rory. So we would bond, and he would only sleep on my chest. Yeah, it was a beautiful time. I still have pictures and memories of all of that time when he was... mini, really.
I've heard other dads say about that time, actually, that night feed, that they really enjoy it because the rest of the world is asleep and it's just them and their baby.
Yeah, I mean, I've always and still am a bit of a night owl, and just those twilight hours with you and your baby they're priceless. It's you can talk, you kind of bond, you can set the world to rights, just the two of you there, and nobody else is around, nobody knows, and it's just a beautiful time.
So during the first pregnancy with Rory, were you just freaking out the whole time, or were you able to focus on what life was going to be like?
The freak out was maybe the first couple of months to 3 months or so, but then I got into it. I mean, I joined in with the whole nesting thing and getting things ready. Rory's first room, I did a massive mural on all four walls.
What of?
Yeah. Of like, there was like a there was like a countryside scene, there was like a red barn over there, there was like a cat, there was a plane, there was a hot air balloon, that, you know, just like a scene, like you're looking out over the hills and far away. So I did that, and that took like, that must have taken about a month to literally paint that room.
That's literally giving you a task and a job to get you almost prepared. In a way, I find doing things is so therapeutic, and it's your time to think.
Do you know what? I hadn't thought of it like that, but when you say that, it makes so much sense because, yeah, I was in that room painting and thinking and preparing.
Yeah,
I was literally preparing for the arrival. Yeah, wow.
So with your mum as midwife, at what point were you both like, actually, shall we get your mum to help with getting this baby out? Or was that just a no-brainer? Your mum, she's there, she's your rock.
Well, hold on. I mean, for Melina, it was probably quite difficult at first to get her head around that. But I tell you what probably cemented it was you're having a baby for the first time and you're going to your antenatal classes or you're going to your checkups and all your bits and bobs and you're having your scans and all of that. And when you're doing that for the first time, I always thought, and I think Melina felt that as well, that you'd have like a contact midwife that you'd like see again after like a month or 2 months, but it wasn't. We were getting passed from pillar to post just because that's the way the NHS is, and people are busy, and you're not always going to see the same person at the same time. And you're having your first child, and you're a little bit like, whoa, hold on, I need some stability, I need some foundation.
Yeah.
And that's where Mum came in, and she was like, hold on, you can see my friend over here, she'll see you again in like blah blah blah. And there was that stability and foundation came, and with that came Mum, and she was the person that we would phone to say, okay, do we go to the hospital yet? Blah, blah, blah. So she came and checked how far dilated we were. And it, you know, it was just from there on, from that moment when you have someone that's like your rock, as it were, during that whole, well, what are we going to do? This is the first time round. It just became, right, yeah, you're doing it.
What an amazing thing, though, to go through together. Like, I know people that have had parents in the room, like mums in the room, but to actually have your mum there as such a vital role within that process.
Yeah. It was... do you know what I mean? It, to someone else, it might seem like, wow. To me, it's like almost normal, because that, all I've ever known is my mum was a midwife.
Yeah.
My mum went to work when I'd go to bed at like 8:30, and she'd have to go to work at 8:45, and my dad would be there, and she wouldn't come back until 8 o'clock the next morning when I'm going to school, and she might take me to school, and then so it was. I was surrounded by a midwife, so it was natural,
yeah,
to me.
But seeing a baby be born, like coming into the world, having two of the women who are, you know, your most important women in the world, do it, like, yeah, create, like, bringing that life in. It must be such a surreal and powerful moment. I imagine it's the most powerful birth your mum's ever experienced, unless your sister has children as well. You know, it's very, there's something about seeing your grandchild be born, your son, your partner's son, you know, yeah, it's a powerful moment.
It's definitely a powerful moment. It's one that you take away forever. And with Sienna, I actually filmed Sienna's one, so I've got that moment with all three of us there, and I've watched it back a few times, and it's one of those moments you can't explain it, it is what it is. It's really hard to put into words. It is just a wholesome moment that cannot quite ever be beaten.
Just the rest of life strips away. And it's all about that.
It's very surreal. Nothing else is, you forget what's around. Everything sort of blurs out. And then this little thing comes and you look at it and you're like, whoa. Oh, yeah. even now, thinking about it, you just go, whoa. How you gave me that responsibility. How could you trust me with that? But here we are.
What was it like holding him for the first time?
I don't know about the first time, because I think it was a bit of a blur. Like we just said, it was blurry, but I can tell you what it was like moving on from there when you come home and you bring baby home. Ooh. And then you're nursing for the next however many months, years. I would love, absolutely love, having him on my chest. He was tiny, really, really, really small. But his favourite place was on my chest, listening to my heartbeat. If he was ever upset or just a little bit grisly or whatever, there, absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. And even Sienna, when she was born, later on, she'd get grisly at night time. But again, next to my chest in a sling on a night walk, like blowing out condensation because it's so cold outside, she was like, this is me. I'm out. See you later. Yeah, those moments were beautiful.
It sounds like you really found your role within that time.
Definitely. I think... because my dad worked so hard and so many hours and wasn't, it's not that he physically wasn't around as much because he was at work. That's just the way it was I'm an 80s child. A lot of people who are in that decade will know exactly what I'm talking about. So because he was away a lot, you know, I remember sitting watching stuff like Knight Rider or The A-Team, you know, those 80s shows.
Yeah.
And I'd see stuff in the shows and I'd be like, Daddy, I watched this today. And I'd want him to sit down and watch it for me. But he always had to go to work and things like that. And I, you know, I don't blame him for that or anything. But not having those moments made me want to have those moments with mine. So when Rory comes to me and says, oh, Daddy, I want to show you this, we have a really good bond in that way. And I think that's because of the way I was brought up.
Yeah. What were those first 3 months of having Rory home like?
I was really lucky because the way I work freelance, I could kind of pick and choose work as it came and went. So I was around a lot, maybe a lot more than you would get as having paternal leave, as it were. So I was around a lot, working from home and doing things from home. So I really got to be around. And like I said, I was doing all the night feeds. So I was fully immersed in it. And I got to see the changes, because you know how babies change literally week to week, day to day. And I got to see that happening all the time. So it was... I feel lucky. I feel blessed that I was able to see it, because a lot of dads don't get to see that and will find it hard to bond with their child in those early months, because mum's bonding as well. And, you know, sometimes dads can feel a little bit like, well, where's my place? Where's my space? But I didn't have that. And because I didn't, and I know how special it is, that's kind of one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about Dadvengers and what we do with Dadvengers, and trying to encourage dads and help dads on that journey, on that side of things, because I know how good it feels.
Yeah. Is that desire sort of increased as well since even doing the baby club and seeing, because I know you didn't do any baby clubs, did you? I think they probably started, they were there, but they would become more popular. And I think at a time it was probably something that mums did. And only in the...
It was definitely something that mums did more of. I wasn't really aware of them, and I didn't... I don't know whether it was through my upbringing. I just didn't feel like I needed it as much, because I was fully involved. I was, you know, I was feeding, I was doing this, doing that. I had family around, so we had the social side of things happening as well. So you've kind of feel, I felt like all my boxes were ticked.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we're doing it. It's all good. But having worked on the baby club now afterwards, if I went back, I'd be like, right, we're going to a baby group, because there is even more that you can get from going to a baby club. And I've only learnt that in the last 2 years, maybe, of doing the show.
Yeah. And I feel like that and Dadvengers kind of runs parallel, because what you're doing with Dadvengers is saying, it's a, like, go do those things. You don't have, you know, you're encouraging them to take not even an interest, or giving them permission, almost kind of saying it's good, it's fine, we can, and showing them that other dads do it, and that we're all kind of finding our way.
The thing that I'll tell you what, there's two things that really kind of cemented the Dadvengers thing was in my head beforehand, but there were two things that kind of cemented it and made me go, no, you really have to do that. One was a conversation with Chris Pilkington, who you know, who is one of the creators of the Baby Club. And he said something to me about, Nigel, you don't know how important what you're doing is for dads. You really don't. And as a black dad, even more so, because of, you know, the stereotypical things that we hear about black dads not being around and all of those things. So he said, you don't realise how important what you're doing is. That was the first one. And the second was when we filmed the dad episode of the Baby Club, which was a special moment for me and a special moment. It was special for everyone in the room. There was a different feeling, because you don't see that often.
Mm.
I don't think I've ever seen, like, a, you know, anyone walk into a baby club and for it to be all fathers. To be there and part of it, you could feel a different energy in the room, and you could feel it was really special. And those two moments together, that made me go, okay, we need this to happen more. We need more moments like that. And yes, Chris, you're right. What I'm doing is important.
What is your overall wish for Dadvengers?
For it to be a place that encourages people that never even thought that they could be as hands-on as you can be with your son or daughter or grandson. It doesn't really matter. And one of the ethoses that we've got at Dadvengers is, yes, it's dad focused. We want to help dads and we want to, you know, provide a place for them. But we really, really want everyone who's a parent involved. So we want mums, we want grandparents, we want carers, we want parenting professionals. We want input from all of those people, because it's not just about, oh, dads, we can help ourselves. Yeah. It's about we can all help each other.
Do you feel like working on the Baby Club has even affected how you parent your two, even though they're older? Or does it make you kind of think about things in a different way?
Definitely makes me think about things in a different way. I'm the kind of person that is always looking for new ways of doing things. I analyze things a lot. So I'm very analytical of a situation or a way of doing things. So even when I'm teaching something, so say off the top of my head in Stomp, if I'm teaching a rhythm or something like that, I'll teach it to someone one way, but I'll teach it to another person another way, because I know that they learn in a different way to that person. So I'm always analyzing which is the best way for you or which is the best way for you. So my mind's always been like that. And then when you add something like Baby Club to it, where they literally open your world and they take you from here, this streamlined view, to no, actually all of this is going on as well. It for me, that was just like, whoa. And I'm just like taking bits from everywhere, going, no, you're learning there, you're learning there, you're learning here. Whoa, we're all learning all the time. And yeah, so I think it opened me up even more.
Mm.
And it complemented what I did already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How have you managed the juggle of working and being a parent? Because you've got some crazy schedule. Like, I remember being on the train to Manchester and you telling me about your day-to-day schedule of when you get work in, Nigel, and it's bonkers.
it is a little bit mad because we have the craziest schedules. So to give you a bit of background, Rory's a gymnast, so he trains when we're not in a lockdown situation. He would train five times a week for 3 or 4 hours.
He's not just a gymnast, he's like a proper gymnast who's got, like, amazing.
Yeah, he trains five times a week. But his words, he'd love to go to the Olympics one day.
Yeah.
In his words. So that's one schedule, right? Add that to Sienna's schedule. She, before lockdown, was doing a West End show. So she was doing anywhere between 3 and 5 shows that she had to get to at West End. And before that, she was rehearsing for that show. So that was 5 times a week rehearsing. Add that to my schedule. Add some school to that. Add Melina's schedule to that. And she runs a dance school. So she teaches at that dance school 3 or 4 evenings a week. Somehow, we all have to manage to drop Rory there, pick Sienna up from there, me go to work, run off to Manchester, come back. It's literally full on. But we take it day by day, week by week, and make it work. And grandparents, thank you very much.
But you also do a lot of your work in the evenings. So you're still practically nocturnal now.
Yeah. Always have been a night out. I think it's from my theatre days as well. It's not often I will go to sleep before 2 or 3 in the morning.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but I'll get up a little bit later. I'll get up at like 9,
right.
8 or 9.
Okay.
But yeah, 3 in the morning. I mean, I've been known to go to sleep at 4.
Nigel! Oh my God, I'm just get up an hour later.
and then if from time to time I say, okay, I'll do the school run in the morning, then I might be up at like 7.
Oh,
I might be up on a 7. Yeah. But I like we said before, I like the nighttime. And it stems a little bit from when I was working in the theatre. If I was working in the theatre, you're not going to be on stage till 6 or 7 o'clock, right? You might do your run through at 6 o'clock in the evening. That's when you start work.
Yeah.
You'll finish work at, like, say, 10-ish. And after that kind of work, you're not going to bed at 11. The adrenaline is still flowing through you till 2 in the morning.
Mm.
So I think my body clock shifted round when I was doing theatre, which was my main thing in my 20s. And it's never really gone away, and I've just kind of stuck with that.
Were you still doing theatre when Rory came along?
Yeah, I was doing Stomp in London when Rory was born. So I would come home sometimes from a show at 10 and be doing the feed. See, that was up. I was ready to go. So doing the 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock feed, that was great.
That's like a kind of perfect partnership. Because you're up anyway, you're feeling that buzz. Melina can go and sleep and get, you know.
You go and sleep.
Yeah. That's amazing. Yeah,
it worked out really, really well.
Do you ever feel guilty? Well, have you ever in the past felt guilty about having to go to work and having to spend time away?
Yeah. I mean, when Sienna was born, I had to go. I mean, this was at a time when I didn't have a lot of work at that time. I remember doing stuff like rickshawing in like central London around Chelsea. It was a Chelsea flower show, I think, at the time. And I was literally riding around on a rickshaw, sweating buckets, taking people round to see different flower stuff because I didn't have a job.
Yeah.
And when Sienna was born, I got a call from Stomp to go and perform in Singapore and Serbia, was it? So I had to go away for 3 weeks. I had to go away for 3 weeks, and Sienna was maybe 4 weeks old.
Oh my
maybe.
Gosh.
So yeah, I had to go away, and I think she might have been a little bit older, and I think Rory and Sienna got ill. I remember coming home and having a horror story told to me that like both of them were like projectiling one way and coming out the other end, and it was just like, and you were not here. And I still hear it to this day.
Really?
And that I was not around at a key moment when they were both ill, because I was away working.
So that's sometimes tricky as well, isn't it, as a performer? You never know what your next job is going to be. So even if you are in Stomp and it's all going amazing, you don't know what's going to happen after that.
Yeah, so sometimes you just have to take that bit of work because you might not have any work for the next 4, 5, 6 weeks, but you've still got the rent to pay. So it's the juggle. It's the constant juggle that we were talking about. I take it day to day, week by week, and thank you, grandparents.
Do you ever feel guilty?
Yeah, sometimes. Sometimes when I can see or feel the sadness in my kids saying goodbye, or I hear that they're in crying at home because they miss daddy. I remember once I was in Birmingham, it was a couple of years ago, and they came up to see the show. They came up to see Stomp, and they got to spend the day, and they were backstage, and they met all of my friends and stuff, and we were all hanging out. But then they had to get the train home afterwards, and Sienna was in bits on the train on the way home. And she's normally the one who's like, whatever, go on, Dad. Yeah, I'll see you soon. But to hear that she was in bits, then you know that, like, oh. Yeah. And that guilt just sort of weighs on you a little bit. But we do what we have to do.
Does it ever make you unexpectedly emotional? Because for me, it just catches me off guard every now and then.
Yeah, it's a definite catching you off guard. I tell you, when it caught me a little bit was after lockdown, after spending so long with them, to then have to go up to Manchester and do some CBeebies, say goodbye to everyone, went, oh. Walking up to the tube, went, oh, here we go. So yeah, and you're not expecting it. And I think that was because we spent such a good time in the last 12 weeks, 13 weeks, whatever it is. I'm not counting anymore, just enjoying it.
It's crazy, isn't it? We've had such a huge amount of time together and we've not gone out of it yet for us, you know. And it's so strange to think that we're going to be apart when we've been together for so long. Yeah. And part of me is craving it and really excited about it. But it is that weird thing of almost back to normality, but it's not, and not really knowing what they're up to again. And in fact, I think you having your age as well, it must be a lovely time to feel like you've got all of them again.
Yeah, definitely. What you said there, you're going to have that same whoa moment that I just had when I went to get, it's coming for you. I'm warning you now.
Oh, I think careful. First day of school, I'm going to be sat in the car just crying.
Exactly. Exactly. You're going to be like, oh, I need them out of the house. They're going to leave. And you're going to be like, bring them back, bring them back. So yeah, definitely. It's a moment that creeps up on you. And I just appreciate it, really. At the end of it all, I just appreciate the fact that I get to spend so much time with my kids and that I have such a good relationship with them. I have a very personal relationship with each of them. It's different. With Rory, it's films, it's computer games, and we bond on that level. With Sienna, she loves to joke and she loves to make me laugh and show me things that make me laugh. She might turn into a comedian one day, I don't know. She might go from performing to comedian, but she has that. She likes laughing and she's got a really good laugh as well. So we laugh a lot together, yeah.
It takes a while though, doesn't it? It takes a while to figure out what that relationship is, what those relationships are, because you kind of, you know, we all read the books before having kids or hear about all these different things and these techniques and you can kind of get sucked into the thinking that it's a one size fits all thing. And you know, this is how we work and this is how we talk. But actually, like you were saying with someone learning how to do the stomp routine, there are different skills that you need with every single child. And there's a different bond that's formed off of the back of that.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to think of it like we think of our friendships with our friends. All of our friends are different. So our kids are all different as well. Mm. And it's about figuring out your relationship with that person. And what you add to that is that they haven't figured themselves out yet. So as they do start to figure themselves out, then that relationship between you and your child becomes different. So as they get, they're getting to 10, 12, they kind of have figured out who they are and what they like and what they like to do and what they don't like to do. So then that relationship that you form with them is much more focused on what they're into.
Mm. What's been the most challenging part so far? Or stage, should I say?
Most challenging stage. That's a good question. I think now's quite a difficult one. It can be, I mean, just before lockdown, because it becomes, I think, going into the secondary school with Rory, you've built up all of those friends in primary school and you know where you are, you know where you stand, you've got the relationship, you know who your best mates are, you know who you don't hang out with, you know who you are. Then we yank you out of all of that, right, and say, no, you're not going there anymore, you're going here. See you later, bye. Plus, we're going to say, oh, we're going to put a load more responsibility on you as well, because you're going to have different subjects. You're going to have to walk to different classrooms. You've got to get yourself organized. You've got to know when to hand in your homework. You've got to do this, that, and the other. So good luck. See you later. You throw all of that at a child. They're like, huh? I was just comfortable. Why couldn't I have stayed with those guys? And we just do the subject thing first and the responsibility in the homework. And then we do the like move to, no. We just throw it all at the same time. Bosh. So I think that is a difficult time, because every child takes it differently and needs different things and needs different support. So this is an interesting time at the moment, and I've got it coming up with Sienna in September. So yeah, just had it with Rory last September and now I've got it with Sienna this September.
And I guess there's that other thing as well. At secondary school, it's a little less drop your kids off at the gates.
It Are we talking about first day or moving forward through the term?
It's kind of like you're properly letting go. You're not, you know, it's almost they're not your kids anymore. They're like little adults who are off to...
They'll always be our kids, G. We're never letting them go, G. Well, I'm not. No, you're right. You have to give them a little bit more leeway and a little bit more. I think one of the... what's that style of parenting? There's a name for it. Curling parents. Have you heard
what
of that?
What is this?
That? Yeah, I heard it on... where did I hear it on? I heard it on Nihal's Radio 5 show. And it's a curling parent, and Claudia Winkleman was talking about it. Now, curling parent is like in curling, the sport. You know, you throw the curling thing, and then you've got the people that sweep, 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 sweep to make sure the path is clear, right? To make sure everything is all right. That is a curling parent. You smooth the things before your child gets there so they never have to have or encounter a problem. Now, I heard that and then I was like, wow, okay, it's kind of a little bit detrimental to be too much of a curling parent. You have to let them hit a few bumps and learn how to do some things themselves. So yes, secondary school is a time when you kind of have to let go a little bit so that they can learn. You kind of have to let go so that they can learn where and what to do and how to deal with situations and find their little place. Because otherwise, if you go down the curling route, you're going to have an 18-year-old who doesn't know how to wash their clothes, who is asking you to do their homework for them. And, you know, you have to get a taxi for them to get home from the pub because they can't call their own. So, yeah, it is a little bit of a letting go.
So I'll get off my hands and knees and stop polishing the floor. There we go. I've never heard that expression before, but I love it. Curling parenting.
I loved it as well. Yeah, I loved it. I loved it when I heard it. Curling parents. And it was explained and I was like, yeah, it makes so much sense. And some people find it really hard to let go.
Yeah.
They find it. They just want their children to have a smooth ride all the way, all the way. And I get it. I fully get it. That is the way we are up until secondary school. You want them. If there's a problem at school, you'll be in there talking to a teacher, talking about, whoa, what's this problem here? But secondary school is a little bit of a time to let that go and to let them find their way. I was thinking about Rory. We just got his school report and one of them said he hadn't handed in a couple of bits of work. And you automatically want to go, okay, and tell them off or whatever, but you kind of have to say, no, you need to learn from that, how to organise and get your work in on time. I can't, no, that's you. How do you feel about that? How will you go back and sort that out? That's, bye,
yeah.
I'm out.
So I think unless you let them do certain things or make mistakes or fall or whatever it is, they won't learn. Or, you know, I even think, so when we had Buddy, Buzz was almost two, almost, and he hadn't been to soft play before. And I can remember taking him to soft play for the first time and literally like my arms around him either side going, oh, he might fall. And then he didn't care. He was up on those things going down the slide. And I had no idea that he could climb and do all those things because I'd been trying to protect him so much. And I think I learned that so much with the boys growing up. It's given them those little tasks, I think, like buttering a piece of bread or their toast or making, you know, just those little things. Like even when I see Buzz go and pour himself a glass of water from the tap, I feel that, isn't he grown up?
See, I had those exact moments right during lockdown. I think I was on a Zoom call, you know, because Zoom calls became the thing, right, during lockdown. And I was busy on a Zoom call. I think Melina was doing a weekly shop or something, and their lunchtime came. But I couldn't leave this call because it was a really important call. And they went and they started getting themselves the lunch sorted out. We're talking about pasta went onto the hob. And I came out and was like, wow, they'd been on the phone to mum going, okay, cool, right, we're going to sort out the pasta. They were, you know, helping each other out with it. And I came out and went, wow, Nice one, guys.
Isn't that amazing? I almost want to get them to the stage where we're all helping and running the house. You know what I mean? Who's making dinner tonight? Who's doing that?
Chores. Chores. Right.
How do you do chores?
We don't do chores. There's a list of things they have to do, like making beds and bits and bobs. But we have an achievement-based thing. So take, for example, Rory has to do loads of gymnastics and hasn't been able to go to his usual 5 sessions a week or whatever. And they're not able to, you know, teach constantly on Zoom. So he has to train himself a little bit. He has to do some fitness work of his own. He can pick something and do it and actually train himself for 40 minutes. So he'll get like a tick for that, for doing that week and this and then blah, blah, blah. And then you look at it in the week and go, you did that and that. So you can do this. Go on. You should treat. So it's a treat-based reward system, as it were.
I like it. Basically, yeah. I want to know when I can start getting the kids to do stuff, like proper stuff. When am I going to sit down and have a hot cup of tea?
You can start that from 5, 6. I mean, if you need the remote in your hand and it's a little bit far away, this can work. We can talk about this situation. I mean, chocolate bars are payment. Smarties, Skittles, whatever you want.
Keep them in my pocket at all times. I've got a Smartie.
Treat-based system. That's what you need.
Has parenting surprised you?
Parenting's surprising every day of the week, G. It doesn't stop surprising me. Yeah, it surprises you every day. There are things that will pop up all the time that will make you go, oh, wow, or oh, or so many emotions, whether they're happy, sad, curious, learning things. I learned what trypophobic is. I've realised that I'm trypophobic or trypophobic. Is that right? I think so. But I learned it through the kids. Basically, you are uncomfortable with lots of holes or repeating patterns close together. And it makes me feel really funny. It makes me feel a little bit destructive.
So you learned that through the kids?
Yeah, I didn't have a clue. And I've had it for years and years, that feeling. Like, you know, when soil gets really dry and it cracks and... Yeah. I don't like it. Water the soil. Get a spade or a fork and dig it and just, you know, sort it out. Make it nice again. But I learned that through them because they were like, oh, no, Daddy, what do you think when you look at these? And I was like, no, I don't like it. And he was like, oh, they were like, oh, okay, well, you are blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
I love it. They're teaching you.
Yeah. I learn from them as much as I can.
Have you been surprised that parenting affects every single area of your life? Like, it feels like every single decision you make from the moment that you find out you're going to be a parent is a huge part of that puzzle, and it affects relationships and, you know, sleep.
Your whole life is affected. It can, and if it isn't, then maybe you're doing something wrong, because it literally infiltrates every area of your life. Like you said, whether it's relationships, sleep, learning and education, what to do, what not to do, so many different parts, how much you're going to work, how much you're not going to work, how hard you're going to work to be able to get them things or give them things. But every single area of your life is affected by having kids. And I personally think it enhances it in all of those areas. I think it gives you, it gave me a bit more of a purpose, doesn't it? It gives you that extra drive. I was driven before, but it gave me even more of a drive and a purpose to be better, to do more, to listen more, to do everything a bit more.
Mm. Have you been surprised how it has affected you and Melina?
Um, We're a team, I can tell you that much. We are a front, I say against them, but a front for them. We work together and it works best together, and the kids benefit more when we're working together on something, when we're heading in the same direction. So yes, it changes your relationship, but ours has been changed, and the focus is, our focus has been them since they were born. So it's always, whatever we've done is for their good. So yeah, in that way, it's totally changed.
I find it really fascinating and slightly scary and sad to think back to the couple that me and Tom were before kids. I mean, we've never been that spontaneous, but the fact that we could just, you know, go off, have conversations, yeah, full conversations without being interrupted, you know, about it just being about us. And then all of a sudden, children have come along and our sort of cozy life together has been massively invaded in an amazing way. But it's funny to think of the people that we were versus the couple that we are now.
Totally. I was late night out. We used to be up watching like TV series at late at night and, you know, hanging out, and you had time back then. That was the biggest thing. The biggest thing from before children, if anyone who hasn't had a child is listening, you have so much time. You have no idea how much time you have. It feels like you don't. I know it feels like you don't. I thought I didn't have time before children. But once you have one, then you go, oh my days, why did I waste so much of that time before? So yeah, that's the biggest one.
So I wrote a book this year called Letters on Motherhood. But if you could write a letter, but that was a series of letters about motherhood, about everything, to my, like, to Tom, to the kids, to different body parts, to my phone, to other mums, other dads. If you could write a letter on being a dad, who would it be to, and what would you say?
Wow. Big question. I would first write to any dad out there who feels like they haven't got a place, or feels like they're not in the bond yet, or they haven't found their spot. I would write to that dad, and there may be hundreds, thousands of them all over the world, and I'd say to them not to worry, not to try too hard, to just be there around your children or with your children, and you will find your place. You will find, they need you, and you, if you're there, you will find out what they need from you.
Mm. I finish every podcast with you finishing three sentences. The first one is, being a dad means?
Being a guide to your children, being their lighthouse, being their protector, their guide, their everything. You're their everything. So they will come to you, and you have to be there for them.
Since having children, I
was driven before, but having children drove me even further to do more, to be better, to provide more for them. So yeah, it made me even more eager to better myself and better my position so that they had the best opportunity.
And I'm happy when?
I'm happy when I'm playing with my kids, messing around. we can be on the sofa watching a movie, we can be doing a TikTok, we can be laughing at jokes. We were having fun yesterday on an Instagram Live, the three of us on my Instagram, chatting to people and having a laugh, and people were telling them dad jokes. Just spending time and having fun with them is amazing fun. And I tell you what, that it's even more fun. I don't know why this is, when mum's asleep, we have even more fun. It's like we have this like naughty fun time. And sometimes you can, they'll say, mum, you go to bed. You're going to go to bed now, mum. Because they know that if, or you're tired, mum, you need to sleep. Then they know that it's going to be a little bit more daddy time. Like, whoa, this is a little bit more off-piste.
I love that. I'm already feeling that at home at the moment. It's kind of like Tom's a fun one. And I'm just there, you know, I'm there doing chores, essentially. And they just love being with him and laughing. And like, literally, even if I'm right, stood right next to them sometimes, they'll still call for daddy. It's still, I'm like, I'm right here. I can have fun too, you know.
I know exactly what you mean, but it's just, don't take offence to it. It's just a little bit more, I don't know. I would call it a little bit more naughty, a little bit more mischievous.
Well, I hope Melina is having a lovely time in the bath or in bed, just chilling out.
Definitely, definitely.
Nigel, thank you so much for coming on and being a guest.
Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.